Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Lisa Teal, and I am privileged to serve as a worship associate for this congregation. And I feel especially honored today to serve with the Reverend Tim Temerson, who is the minister at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Akron, and who also happens to be my mentor in the lay ministry program. So really happy to have him here. We're also joined today by music director Hal Walker, director of religious education Lily Rappaport, and the UUCK Peace Choir. I light this chalice this morning as a symbol of the light that is within each of us and that which unites us all.
If you want to be happy, then practice compassion. If you want others to be happy, then practice compassion. If you want to be happy, then practice compassion. If you want others to be happy, then practice compassion.
To see you. If you want others to be happy, then practice compassion. I don't know if I need to offer a call to worship this morning. That just about says it all. But on this day when we gather together to listen, to learn, and to be inspired by the wisdom and the compassion of two great teachers, let me share these words that I've adapted from my colleague Wayne Arneson. We come together today seeking a reality beyond our narrow selves, a reality that binds us in compassion, love, and understanding to other human beings and to all living things. May our hearts and minds be open to the power and the insight of these great teachers so that we can weave together the scattered threads of our lives and remember the wholeness of which we are a part. Come, let us worship together. Friends, as we hold the joys and sorrows of our lives, I invite you to join with me now for a brief moment of prayer. Spirit of life and love, energy of compassion and understanding that dwells in and among us. We invite and welcome your presence with us this day. We ask that those in this community and those throughout our world, we ask that they find a path to healing and hope in these troubled times. Our prayer today is that the joys that fill our lives be greater, that they be shared, and that they bring laughter and smiles to our faces and to the faces of those we love. And we ask that those who are struggling and suffering this day, struggling with loss, with despair, and with injustice, we ask that they too find a path to light in the midst of darkness. And finally, we ask that all in this community, this beloved community, know and remember that through the joys and sorrows of your lives, that no matter where life takes you, no matter what you are going through, that in this community, you are not going through it alone. Amen, and blessed be. Share a brief reading with you from the Christian scriptures, from the Christian Bible. This is from the Gospel of Matthew. You have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, for they are children of God. For God makes the sun rise on the evil and the good, on the neighbor and the enemy. God sends rain on both the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love only those who love you, what reward do you have? If you greet only your brothers and your sisters, what more are you truly doing than others? Be perfect, be merciful, be compassionate, as your Father in heaven is perfect, merciful, and compassionate. Here ends our reading. Well, it's a great joy to be with you this morning, and I bring you greetings from your friends at the UU Church of Akron. And I also want to thank Lisa for her help and guidance in putting the service together. And Lisa, it's really a great joy to be working with you. I'm learning as much from you as I think you are from me. So it's really wonderful. And thank you for the invitation. So let's begin this morning with a story. A story about a young boy who lived over 2,000 years ago in northern India. Now, this young boy was actually a prince surrounded by great wealth and privilege, and who spent most of his days sheltered behind palace walls. One day in early spring, the boy and his father, who was the local king, decided to attend the spring planting festival. As the young prince sat on the ground watching the first plowing of the fields, he suddenly had a vision of the insects and their eggs living in the ground. He saw the plows tearing into not only the ground beneath them, but also into the insects and their eggs. He, in that moment, experienced their pain, their despair, and their fear. Sorrow and grief filled the young boy's heart, for he felt as if his own relatives were suffering and even losing their lives. As the prince sat with his grief and his sorrow, something extraordinary happened to him. His empathy for the insects induced a kind of trance in which he experienced the deep interconnectedness and unity of life. In that instant, the young prince was no longer absorbed just with his own life and his own desires. He no longer saw himself as the center of the universe. His existence was not separate or distinct from that of the insects. Their suffering had become his suffering. Their lives were one with his life. And for that very brief moment of deep connection and awareness, the young prince experienced an overwhelming sense of peace and serenity. A peace and serenity that can come from understanding life as it truly is, beautiful and painful, joyful and sorrowful, deeply connected and yet often divided by our inability and our unwillingness to see and experience life through the eyes of another. Now, that young prince, of course, was Siddhartha Gautama, who we know today as the Buddha. Now, Siddhartha's brief moment of insight and deep compassion eventually passed, as such moments do, and the young prince returned to his everyday life. He eventually married a beautiful princess, and they had a son. Life for the prince and his family was very good, and yet, for Siddhartha, life was not so good. In spite of all the luxuries and all the pleasures of life, fear and suffering remained. No amount of wealth or luxury could shield him and his family from the reality of change and impermanence, of illness and pain, of loss and death. Now, the reality of suffering and the inevitability of death filled the prince with fear, and I would say despair. A despair that eventually led him to leave his family in search of a solution. And for the next 6 years, Siddhartha followed numerous spiritual paths and gurus, leading him from the extremes of vast material comfort and pleasure on the one hand, to an austerity and asceticism so severe that he nearly lost his life. And yet nothing eased his despair and his dissatisfaction. Now, one night, Siddhartha resolved enough. He decided to sit under a tree until he figured this thing out. And on that wondrous night, or maybe it was several nights, as he sat under the what came to be known as the Bodhi tree, or the tree of enlightenment, Siddhartha finally awakened. Awakened to the realities of life and to the path leading away from the anguish and despair he had experienced. And that path, which he called the middle path, leads not to a heavenly abode of ease and perfection, but rather to a new way of understanding and living in this world. And with that new understanding, with that new way of life, Siddhartha experienced that same peace and serenity that the young prince had felt so many years earlier as he watched the fields being plowed. A peace and serenity that the Buddha came to call nirvana. Now, what exactly is nirvana? Well, I can tell you that it isn't a place up there or beyond time. It's not two blocks from this church or across the street from my congregation in Fairlawn. And it's not the best grunge band ever. Well, actually, maybe that is nirvana. You see, nirvana is all around us. It's in this room, in this time, and in this place. To experience nirvana is to live in the present moment and to be deeply aware that in the midst of the constant change and fluctuations of life, life is a blessing and a gift. And nirvana is all about experiencing and living with compassion, about seeing beyond all the attachments and assumptions and biases which separate and divide us and that so often lead us to live from places of fear and suspicion. It's about understanding the reality of our connectedness and oneness with other human beings and with all living things. And it is the reality of what the great Buddhist monk and teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, whose words you'll hear in a few minutes, what he calls interbeing. I love that, interbeing. And that's what leads the Buddha to call on us, as that responsive reading so beautifully says, to cultivate boundless goodwill and to radiate friendliness above, below, and all around the world without limit. So that's the Buddha. So let's fast forward now several hundred years from his life, and let's move from northern India to the land of Israel. There we find another young man who chooses to leave his home village in search of a new way for himself, for his people, and for the world. Now, as they had experienced for many, many generations, the people of Israel lived under the domination of a foreign power, in this case, the Roman Empire. High levels of taxation and the brutality of military occupation led to despair and discontent throughout the land. The young man, Jesus of Nazareth, most certainly lived in a world of fear and uncertainty, a world in which society was guided much more by power and privilege rather than by love and compassion. I'm sorry to say that sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Now, the gospel accounts tell us that, like Siddhartha, Jesus left his family and home village of Nazareth. While he was journeying out, he encountered a religious radical by the name of John the Baptist who preached that the end of the world was at hand, that any moment a wrathful God would intervene to save the righteous and to condemn all sinners. Like the Buddha, Jesus also experimented with severe asceticism, fasting for 40 days in the wilderness. And the gospel account tells us that he also ultimately rejected the path of earthly wealth and power. Now, I don't know if it's correct to say that Jesus had attained something similar to nirvana when he emerged from the wilderness, but it is clear that he was a changed man. Jesus soon began to heal the sick and teach those who would listen. And at the heart of his teaching and his ministry was an extraordinarily beautiful vision. A vision not of wrath and vengeance, as John the Baptist had proclaimed, but instead a vision of a world of love and compassion for all, a world that he proclaimed to be the kingdom of God. Now, I've used that word compassion a great deal, and I'd like to take a moment now to say something more about it. You see, I think we often equate the word compassion with pity and with feeling sorry for another person. But as both Buddha and Jesus taught, compassion is about something much deeper than a passing emotion or a feeling like pity. Living with compassion means questioning one's fears and biases and instead putting oneself in the place of another, seeing the world to the best of your ability through their eyes and trying to experience life as they experience it. To live with compassion is to move beyond attachment to one's own needs to a genuine concern and empathy for another. And compassion is not something that we simply have when it's convenient or when it fits our emotional or even material needs. Compassion, as both Buddha and Jesus made clear, is truly a way of life. So I want to leave you this morning with another story, what is perhaps Jesus' most famous parable, a parable that I think points to the essence of what it means to live with compassion. One day, a man came to Jesus and asked what he had to do to attain eternal life. Jesus told the man that he had to follow what has come to be known as the Great Commandment, which is to love God with all your heart and all your soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Then the man asks my favorite question in all of the Christian scriptures, but who is my neighbor? Jesus answers by telling the man this story. Once upon a time, a man, a traveler, journeyed down the road between Jerusalem and Jericho. At some point in his journey, he was attacked by thieves. The unfortunate man was not only robbed of his possessions, but also beaten, stripped of his clothes, and left for dead along the side of the road. Sometime later that day, two men, both religious leaders, come down the same road. One is a temple priest and the other is a Levite, which meant that he was a kind of religious official, maybe a worship associate, I don't know. When the priest saw the injured man lying on the side of the road, he crossed to the other side and kept going rather than stopping to help. When the Levite came upon the injured man, he did the same thing. Finally, a third man, a Samaritan, came by, and when he saw the injured man, he stopped, bound up his wounds, and took the man to the nearest inn. The Samaritan cared for the injured man and paid for his room out of his own pocket. Now, at one level, the parable of the Good Samaritan is a pretty straightforward answer to the question posed to Jesus. Three men find an injured stranger along the side of the road. The first two men do not see a neighbor worthy of love and care and keep going. The Good Samaritan, a man who himself was an outsider, an outcast in society, sees the stranger as a neighbor and stops to help. So the answer Jesus is offering to the original question, who is my neighbor, is quite simple, but incredibly powerful. Everyone is our neighbor, our friends and our enemies, those who know, those we know and those we have never met, the person sitting next to us and the stranger who lies injured along the side of the road. For Jesus, there's no division between us and them, neighbor and stranger, friend and foe, insider or outsider. There are no walls, no barriers, no boundaries separating one of us from the humanity and dignity of another. We are all the children of God. Now, that's a pretty powerful message, a message that our world certainly needs to hear and follow. But I want to just take a minute to go a little deeper into this parable, because ultimately I think this story is about not only about compassion, but also about fear, which I have to say these days is a topic I keep coming back to. The same kind of fear I think that so many of us and so many in our world are feeling right now. And in considering the place of fear in this story, I want to share with you an interpretation of this wonderful parable that was offered by none other than Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in that famous speech he gave on the night before he was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. This is a part of the speech many people aren't familiar with, but in some ways it's my favorite part. Now, while most interpretations of this parable examine the actions and motives of the Good Samaritan, he was guided by compassion and unconditional love, Dr. King focused his attention on the two men who walked past the injured man, the priest and the Levite. And he begins by speculating as to why they didn't stop to help. Perhaps, Dr. King says, they were on their way to an important religious gathering. You know, they had a church, or I should say a synagogue meeting that they couldn't be late for. Or maybe they were concerned that they would be breaking a religious law that forbid them to touch an unclean human body. But ultimately, Dr. King rejects both of these interpretations and instead argues that the reason that the two men didn't stop was simply because they were afraid. And, you know, who can blame them? As Dr. King said, that road between Jerusalem and Jericho was a notoriously dangerous road that was actually known as in that day as the road of blood. Dr. King imagined that when the priest and the Levite saw the injured man, they thought that the same robbers and thieves who had attacked him might still be around, or that perhaps that man lying in the ditch was just faking it and that he was going to get up and attack them. And fear led these two men to a fateful question. A question that gets to the heart of what it means to live one's life from a place of compassion rather than fear. And here's the question. If I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? What will happen to my life, to my livelihood, to my family, to all that I care about and hold dear? According to Dr. King, it was the fear of what might happen to them if they reached out and offered help. It was that fear that prevented the priest and the Levite from being able to see beyond themselves and beyond their fear to the needs of a fellow human being. Now, let me pause here to say a word about the priest and the Levite. While it's easy to see them as the bad guys and the villains in this story and condemn them for their callous and heartless behavior, I have to say that Dr. King's retelling of the story leads me to find their behavior both understandable and, I'm sorry to say about myself, quite familiar. It makes sense, I think, that anyone journeying down that road would have been on edge in the first place, and that coming upon a person lying on the ground would have been likely to add to their fear and anxiety. How many of us would have stopped to help or would have asked the same question the priest and the Levite did and then kept going? But thankfully, along came the Good Samaritan, a man, as I said before, who himself was an outsider and deemed by many to be unworthy and a second-class citizen. When the Good Samaritan saw the injured man, the same fear and anxiety that had gripped the priest and the Levite undoubtedly entered his mind. But rather than asking himself, if I stop to help this man, what will happen to me, Dr. King says the Good Samaritan reversed the question. If I do not stop to help this man, what will happen to him? And that, friends, is what it means to follow the way of compassion and to live with that unreserved, unhesitating embrace of the other that is at the heart of the teaching of both the Buddha and Jesus of Nazareth. Although there is much that differentiates their ideas and their religious traditions that bear their names, I think one thing is so very clear. Although we live in a world filled with greed and with despair, and yes, with a lot of fear, for both Siddhartha and Jesus, there is another way and another path, a path of kindness toward the other, of compassion for self and for neighbor, of peace toward the nations, and of love for humankind and for all of life. And whether one calls oneself a Buddhist or a Christian, an atheist or a humanist, a Muslim or a Unitarian Universalist, that path of love and compassion is open and calling to all of us. So the challenge and the invitation I leave you with is this: follow the way of compassion. Take the time to listen before you judge. Empathize before you condemn. Open your heart before you close your mind. Have compassion for yourself, for others, for all living things, and for this beautiful earth. Let this holiday season truly be a time of peace and goodwill, and yes, compassion toward all. Blessed be, and thank you so much for listening. Friends, as we go forth from this place, may the spirit of love and compassion rule our hearts and our minds. And may they guide us into those ways that will create love and justice and peace on earth this day and every day. May your days be blessed and go in peace.